Welcome back to the program. Adoption today is a far cry from the idyllic portrayal we may have imagined and witnessed many years ago. It has become engaged in international politics, domestic politics, even the abortion debate. Add to this the complexity of the process, the expanding landscape of open adoptions, and you have a space that is no longer just about the love of a child, but an emotional minefield for prospective parents that they must learn how to navigate. That's the backdrop for a new novel, a powerful portrayal of adoption by my guest Jennifer Gilmore. Jennifer Gilmore is the author of two previous novels, Golden Country and Something Red. She's written for numerous publications, has been a McDowell Colony Fellow, and taught writing and literature at Cornell University, Barnard, and at New York University. She currently teaches at Princeton, and her new novel is The Mother. It is my pleasure to welcome Jennifer Gilmore to the program. Jennifer, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
The one thing that is certainly true today is it's pretty clear that adoption is certainly not for the faint of heart anymore.
Absolutely not. Once the child becomes adopted, things change. But on the way, on the process to that, it really isn't for the faint of heart. And as much research as you do and as many stories as you hear, you're not really prepared for what you go through. So my protagonist and her husband think, you know, once they reach, they're going to adopt a child, they have no idea what's in store for them.
Why has, in your view, why has the process gotten so complex? Why has it become the emotional minefield it is today, as it is for your couple and the mothers?
Well, it's complicated. Basically, people are doing a lot less than international adoption, where you kind of got into a queue, and then when your turn came up, you got this child. So there was less, your time frame was more clear. As you noted in your opening, international adoption has declined a lot because of the, you know, the Hague laws, the volatility of countries, Russia banning adoption. And what's mostly done in this country in domestic adoption is open adoption. I think about 55% of adoptions are open. And what that means is you have direct contact with the birth mother, the birth father. All parties are sort of involved to various degrees. Now, how that happens, it depends on what route you go, but most of the time, birth mothers can contact you directly. So you get to know each other. You know, sometimes they don't choose you. Sometimes they're not, in fact, birth mothers. And so this process has become painful to a lot of people who are trying to sell themselves to these birth mothers. They have a big house. They have, you know, lots of things to offer the birth mother's child. So it's almost competitive at this point, and in this book anyway. And as I said, there's a lot of coded language, and people have no idea how difficult it can be when they don't get chosen or when things don't turn out as they planned. But then again, I mean, that's what happens in life, right?
But because there is no federal standard, it is really state by state in terms of the rules, and even within the context of the various state laws, there are so many different ways to go about this, it really becomes uncharted landscape for everybody. There's no single set of rules that any prospective parents can follow.
Absolutely. As in the book, I say, it's the Wild West out there. The only law that's federated is the Indian Child Welfare Act, which a lot of people might know is being argued in the Supreme Court right now. But, yeah, there are different laws, the birth mother's relinquishment laws, how long you have to stay in the state, there's tons of different laws, and agencies and lawyers only tend to know the laws in their own state. So, it's confusing for a lot of people. The money spent is different in each state, but, you know, when I say it's not for the faint of heart, you just learn these things as you come upon them. Like most of the people I know or people know somebody who has been adopted, love somebody who is going through this process. And all of these people I've spoken to, they all have their quote unquote bad story, this horrible story where the birth mother changed her mind or something, which she has every right to do, but something that has broken them. And then they have the good story, which is of their child. And the bad story sort of stays. But in this book, I really wanted to get to the process and what happens before that experience fades.
One of the things that you talk a lot about in The Mothers and that has become part of this process in so many different, both overt and more subtle ways, are issues of race and class. Talk a little about that.
Absolutely. I was really shocked. So we've got this notion of choice. The birth mothers can choose who they want to parent their children. But as you go along and the more you learn in adoption, you sort of check off what you can, who you can parent. So, is it African American? Is it, African American and Hispanic? Is it, mixed race? And then you check off these boxes and you check off these boxes of how much, drug use the birth mother had is acceptable to you. Mental illness, special needs, these kinds of things. So what you're doing is hypothetically deciding on what kind of child, what the child will look like and be like. But of course we don't know. And in the book she says, Jessie, the protagonist, that everybody has a story. So as soon as you hear the story, everything falls away. But what has shocked me in adoption is the openness with which people talk about race. In the book there's two men in the South who only want a white child, and she finds this disgusting, but because her and her husband are very open to race. But then again, they live in a small town. They're gay. They already have what they consider the community against them. So everybody is doing what they're doing for a reason, and they're doing what they can manage. But that conversation, those boxes, were startling to me. Also, there are other questions that were asked were also quite startling.
The other thing that changes the landscape from many, many years ago is the degree to which the birth father is involved in the process today.
Absolutely. And, there, again, laws are different in every state, but often the birth mother is making this decision on her own for whatever reason. She might be disenfranchised. She might not have support of her community. The birth father might have stepped out of the picture. But the birth father, again, as it should be, has rights. And so if she says the birth father's not around, and then the birth father is around and comes back, he, of course, can claim his child. And, again, all of these things make sense ethically. But when prospective adoptive parents are lied to constantly, as I said, it's heartbreaking for them. But at the same time, the birth father who comes forward and has been lied to by the birth mother deserves to parent his child. And then in other examples, that doesn't work as well. But yeah, the birth father has rights. And in most cases, when there's an adoption, you have to put out an advertisement in the local paper saying that this is happening. And again, that's different in every state, how long you have to do that for, when you have to do it. But it is, only fair that the birth father knows what the story of his own child.
In a much broader sense, it redefines what parenthood, motherhood in some cases, is really all about, because there are so many people involved in the process.
That's a really interesting, statement, because in the book, and I mean myself included, because it's been so difficult for the protagonist to have kids, she's had so much time to think about what it means to be a mother. And, when you start thinking about anything hypothetically, you can drive yourself crazy. Why she wants to be a mother, to keep the generations going in her family, to keep the stories going. But then there's all these sort of examples of motherhood around us. I live in Brooklyn, New York, the mothers with their, their cliques here. And yeah. I personally don't really want to be a part of that necessarily, but the protagonist does, Jessie does. And so also, Mother's Day, we just had Mother's Day on Sunday. And, what that feels like to be excluded from these very important moments in the culture. At the same time, motherhood is about something very different than what's in the culture. It's an internal thing. And I think Jessie is sort of negotiating that, just as I did.
The other thing that you talk about, and it's certainly true for Jessie and Ramon, is the toll that it takes on them and the people they are at the end of this process versus where they started out.
Yes, I've actually had a lot of readers have commented on this being the story of a marriage, a very close look in a marriage that's very under a lot of strain. And yes, they're not the same people who they were at the beginning. They're not the same couple. And how do you maintain connection when all of these things have gone wrong, and it's affected them emotionally, financially, and they feel like they're failing all the time. A lot of marriages wouldn't survive that. What kind of marriage does, I don't know, but they are under a lot of pressure, and their marriage is fraught because of it. Who knows what will become of them if they get a child, and how they'll sort of negotiate back to the surface, sort of. But yeah, I wanted it to be a look at that marriage. Also, Jessie is very selfish in her desire to be a mother. She doesn't think about how her husband feels. She's just sort of full throttle ahead. I'm going to do this. And then there's a scene where, you know, Ramon says, well, what about the fathers? And, you know, the men who have read this book, and I know all writers say, you know, a lot of men have read my book, but a lot of men have read this book. And I've been very fascinated by how important fatherhood is to men and how it's really not spoken about at all in the same way as motherhood. And that was fascinating to me, and I wanted to sort of give a voice to that, too.
Based on your research, your own personal experience, which some of this is drawn from, and everything that you know about this, what, if anything, could make this process easier today, given the realities of the culture, given the economic and social realities of adoption today, the international adoption problems you touched on earlier? What could change to make this process more comfortable?
A really good question, because I don't know how it would work. Open adoption is, by all accounts, better for the child, who won't fantasize about who their parents are, who won't have to decide at 18 whether they're going to find them. They sort of always know, and there's a reality to it. However, now with the internet, everybody is so out there and available. People put their profiles online. They pay people to put their profiles online. You can be contacted at all times. If I was still in this process, I would have my phone on and might have to leave this conversation if a birth mother called. I'd have to keep it on all the time, hoping and also dreading a little bit this call. So in some ways, again, it's sort of protecting the people who are being called. I don't know how you do that, because you want to be as available as possible, but at the same time, that can be very, very touchy. A lot of people call. They want emotional support. They're not really pregnant. They're calling 15 people. Some of them do want money, and it's really stressful. So if there's some way, again, to protect prospective adoptive parents, just as children are protected and just as birth mothers are protected, as they should be, I'm not questioning that in the least, it would make, I think, a bit of a easier process. But like IVF, fertility treatments, like everything people who can't have kids go through to try to have children, I mean, it's a crapshoot, really.
One of the things that underlies all this are sort of basic market forces, supply and demand. There just aren't enough kids.
I know. This idea that adoption is completely altruistic is an outmoded idea. You know, as you noted, you know, historically, politically, how things have changed with adoption, well, international closing up, and then, you know, Roe v. Wade very much changed the landscape of adoption. People can have abortions now. So there are, now it's been a while, but there are often less children than people who want them. And I think that that is something that the adoption community, like lawyers and agencies, don't make that obvious, because they want to, you know, they want you to believe that you are going to get a child, and you will likely. It could be 10 years down the line. So, yeah, I think the supply and demand is a good way of seeing it, as painful as it is. You know, when I say I've recently adopted a child, and when I say, oh, my child's adopted, you know, I get bigger scoops of ice cream. People are so excited. And what they don't understand is I would have thrown myself in traffic for this child. And that me getting this child meant that somebody else didn't.
The other aspect, and this has become arguably less of an issue today, but certainly in the 90s, it was a big issue, in the early 2000s, not knowing what the true history of the child is sometimes, and what the exposure might have been, and what some of the problems that you're inheriting might be.
Absolutely. I mean, part of the idea of open that I've neglected to say is there is a certain amount of transparency in regards to medical history that is really, really helpful, obviously. You need to know if your child gets sick, what's going on. So closed adoption often closed off those medical records. And you had, you know, people had no idea of family histories. The converse thing about that is you lay out somebody's family history and you think, oh my God, the aunt has schizophrenia, alcoholism, you know, all sorts of issues. I mean, frankly, if you laid out my family history, I don't know how great it would look either. But knowing what you're getting is great for preventative reasons. Some people would argue that it doesn't really matter. You know, there is sort of this language with adoption that you've made your way to this particular child, that this child has been waiting for you. He's been, or she's been marked for you, and it doesn't matter anything about who he is or where he comes from. I mean, that is the way of it.
What role does money play in the process?
A lot. I mean, if we'd had a lot of money, it would have been a different situation in some ways. Money allows you to, like in anything, allows you to have just a lot more choices. You can pay for more advertising. You can pay to adopt in a state like Florida where the revocation, everyone wants to adopt in Florida because the revocation rights are so short. I believe it's 24 hours, but at the same time, it's a good deal. You know, the lawyers are very, very expensive, and you have to pay as, you know, you should be paying in some way, but there is no limit to what you can pay birth mothers. There's a different feeling to Florida than there is, say, in New York or California. And then, you know, you get into these ethical issues, too, and when you have money, perhaps you don't think about them the same way. Not that you don't think about the morality of what you're doing, but you're able to protect yourself in different ways, if that makes sense.
Is there state shopping that goes on with respect to adoption, people deciding that if they're going to adopt, maybe we need to move to X place because it's easier or that process will suit us better?
I don't know if it's about a prospective adoptive parent moving, but perhaps choosing certain states where the birth mother comes in. So if you are advertising in, say, the little penny favors like they did in the movie Juno, you might pick a different state than, say, Oklahoma, which for some reason is sticking in my head as it has prohibitive laws for prospective adoptive parents. And your lawyer or your agency might know that. So you are sort of picking places through the guidance of supposed professionals who are telling you can't adopt in this state. This you know, the birth mother can take the child back at 3 months as opposed to 2 days. And again, I do want to stress the birth mother has the right to do this. I'm just talking about how it affects prospective adoptive parents. I mean, open adoption really also is there for the birth mother to help her with her grief, because it's obviously a huge moment and a big, generous act that she's doing when she places her child with another family.
Are there people that do this numerous times, or is it an experience that is so difficult usually that once is enough?
You know, it's funny. I get asked, "So, would you do this again?" And point blank, no. No way. But that said, I know plenty of people who have two adopted children, some who have three adopted children. They had an easier time for whatever reason. It could be luck. It could be time. You know, things have changed a lot, even in the past couple of years, with Guatemala closing due to the Hague laws, with Russia closing, with people, as I said, turning less to international adoption. And there's a proliferation of agencies, of lawyers, because domestic adoption is so the way people go now. Before that, you know, you had more of maybe a smoother experience. I'm not sure. Also, the economy, I was told by the agency I was working with that, you know, you didn't see birth mothers scamming. And as I said, not all these people are pregnant, so it would be wrong to call them birth mothers. But now, you know, you see one every month or so. But now it's about 30. You know, the economy has not helped. Everyone's in trouble. So this is just one way to get money. And, of course, it's, you know, preying on people in their most raw and tender moments.
Jennifer Gilmore, her new novel is The Mothers. It's just out from Scribner. Jennifer, I thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Oh, Jeff, it was so nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. We'll take a break. I'll be right back.